Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and today, as a part of SDPB's Landscapes of South Dakota series, we're coming to you from Oglala Lakota College on the Pine Ridge Reservation. My guests now are Wilmer Mesteth. He's a spiritual leader, musician, and instructor of Lakota Studies at Oglala College. And Wilmer, thanks for joining us on the program.
Yes.
Also with us is tribal historian Mike Hermanyhorses. And Mike, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
One of the things I wanted to talk about and address here is to, you know, for those of us who are not from Pine Ridge, we're not Lakota, or even people who don't know anything about the Lakota culture, how would you introduce it to people? If you met someone for the first time, Mike, and you wanted to share with them what it means to be Lakota, what would you say?
Probably in a nutshell, I would describe it as like no other place on earth. We are a people who are peace-loving, family-orientated. We reach out and we share, and we're very generous. Visitors who've come here come back every year. The repeat visitors, we open ourselves up. We're by nature very friendly people. And so to the complete stranger, we would say, welcome, come here and learn.
How about for you, Wilmer? What would you say? How do you introduce Lakota culture to people?
Well, for me, I have a lot of visitors that come to visit me because of my status as a spiritual leader and as an instructor here at Oglala Lakota College. People, I have professors that come, you know, from different universities, you know, seeking out culture, Lakota culture. And so it's kind of interesting for me to meet all these people from different countries. You know, I've had people from Japan, Europe, you know, Asia, everywhere, Africa. And it's interesting, you know, and we share culture. When they come to visit me, I have expectations of them and their expectations of me. And then we meet halfways, you know, because we're a thriving culture. We're not a dead culture. And that's what I try to express to our visitors.
And when what are some of the questions that you get from people, from visitors?
Well, some of them, you know, it's kind of hilarious questions, you know, that probably has a lot to do with maybe ignorance, you know. Uh-huh. Or do you still live in teepees, you know, like that? You know, we live in regular homes just like anybody else, you know, mainstream society, you know. But our homes, you know, maybe because of our poverty situation on our reservation, they don't come up to par with, you know, the country.
Well, Mike Hermanyhorses, how do you deal with some of that ignorance and some of these questions? You just respect, understand that, you know, they don't know, and you're here to kind of help them understand.
Well, I think we ask people to keep an open mind, and in that process, we, of course, share our history and our songs and our traditions. A lot of people come here looking for something spiritual. So we're able to, through our actions and through our ways, to slowly get rid of that ignorance that they may have come here with, or preconceived ideas that they came here with. We've have neighbors that border us that never been here their entire life. That's the level of ignorance. And we've been reaching out to them. We shop in their communities. And yet those very same people, when there's a disaster in Haiti, will donate to that. Well, they're living right next door to us and won't extend that. So that's uncalled for. That's just total. It's either racism or it's ignorance. One of the two.
So people here in South Dakota are just as much strangers as the visitors from Japan or Africa.
Yes.
Yes.
Another thing I'd like to discuss is getting to the history. And this is a big topic and a complicated topic, but who are some of the important Lakota figures in history that you would talk about with strangers as far as helping us understand Lakota culture? Who are some of the most important?
Well, you know, in our Lakota culture, you know, some of the most famous figures are like Chief Sitting Bull, Chief Crazy Horse, and Red Cloud, you know. But there's people in our culture and that are known by our own people that are equally as important. And they're chiefs and warriors and medicine people that are equally as important, just like Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, and Red Cloud. But you don't hear about them, you know. Some of us come and descend from these lineages of these chiefs and warriors. You know.
And who are some of those?
Well, in my family, we have quite a few, you know. And all my great-grandfathers, and they participated in the Battle of Little Bighorn, you know. And we come from a community called Richard Table Community. And they tried to stay together. It was last Tioche Bias that stayed together. They were all participants of the Little Bighorn Battle. And so there's Kills 100, High Eagle, Red Shirt, Comes Again, Rocky Mountain Sheep, Knee, Live Outside Lodge. There's quite a few of them in Richard Table Community that you don't hear their names. But we have oral history, you know, and we had elders that were eloquent in speaking about oral history and the actual battle eyewitness account and what these people did in that battle. But you don't hear it because ethnologists didn't make their way over to interview them, maybe. I don't know what it was, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's how it is, you know.
In talking about the famous figures that we all know, in focusing on them, do we sometimes get a distorted view of Lakota history?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not an accurate portrayal of history if you're just looking at those individuals, you know. Because that Battle of Little Bighorn wasn't won just by those individuals. Mm-hmm. It took a collective effort from all the people, all the warriors as a whole.
And Mike, from your perspective, who are some of the important figures well-known and not so well-known in Lakota history?
I think we'll start with the those that are not well-known but are the backbone of all of this, and those are our women, Lakota women. Kept a family together, raised the children, did all the things to keep the nation going. And that allowed the men, leaders like Red Cloud and Crazy Horse and others, to do their work, their role, assume their role. And it was a age-graded society that we had, and leadership through their actions was earned and respected. But behind it, again, it was a woman. I grew up with women, my mother, my aunt, my grandmother. And I could say that they were a force in our family. A great deal of my family's educated, college educated, and it came from that, the push, and then the support. So I think that still goes on today. Men's role has changed over time, and I think the government had a lot to do with that. For many years, we were emasculated because they took away our primary roles as hunters and providers and warriors. Now that's changed. It's coming back. You'll see, if you look in this library, the hundreds of pictures of men and women who served in the military. So they're able to fulfill that role as a warrior through that access and service and enlistment in the military. Hunter, there's some of that yet. Mm-hmm. So all of that, plus like the role of the college and education, restoring our self-esteem in who we are. So we're only getting better, and we're getting more forceful, and we're a force in South Dakota. State government tends to ignore us. They say we have low unemployment, 3.5. Well, there's 85% unemployment here, but they don't factor that in there. So you almost have a system of apartheid in South Dakota. And hopefully your program here will begin to chip away at that and find out what the real issues are that separate us and work to provide means to protect our quality of life out here.
Wilmer Mesteth, as an instructor here at Oglala Lakota College, I'm wondering from the perspective of what you see with your students, if you see something of a renaissance, perhaps, or maybe a repairing of some of the damage that was done. We were talking to Thomas Shortbowl earlier about the cultural genocide. If you're seeing more, say, for example, younger generations learning the Lakota language?
Oh, yes. Today, you know, our students here on the Pine Ridge Reservation, Oglala Lakota College, a lot of our students there experience a cultural renaissance, you know, and it's pretty exciting. People are interested in their language. We got language revitalization efforts going on. We have a conference that's coming up shortly here in October 10th up in Rapid City. That's all on language revitalization. And there's a lot of programs in the schools now that are offered in the elementary and high schools pertaining to learning the language. And here at Oglala Lakota College, you know, a lot of our students are starting to speak the Lakota language and utilize it. And not only that, is they're searching out their history and their identity of who they are and where they come from. A lot of our students show that interest. And after all these years, you know, participating in education since the 1800s to now, when our ancestors, like great-grandparents, you know, in the early, late 1800s, they were carted off to Carlisle, Pennsylvania, far away, you know, from our reservation. And they went to these schools over there. Pratt was one of the first Indian educators, you know, at that time. And he kind of forced his will on all the native people and military type, you know, education and forcing it and ramming it down the throats of native people. No longer, we won't accept that no more, that type of education no longer, you know. We come a long ways, you know. Now we're in charge of our own destiny and we can foresee our future. We've come up to par with mainstream society. You know, in the period of 100 years, 100, maybe 150 years, you know, how can you, you know, measure that, you know,
right,
when you talk about culture, people.
No, talking about the Lakota language and its importance to the culture and particularly telling stories, mm-hmm. Is that a vital way to tell the stories? The question I'm asking is, can you really get at the heart of the stories and the culture through English? Is it really important to be able to speak Lakota?
I do a lot of oral storytelling is an oral tradition in our culture. And we have a lot of ohunkanka, you know, stories of the ancient, we call it. And I tell these stories because there's a lot of truth in these stories, you know. But it's very in-depth. And the full story, you can only captivate it in the Lakota language, you know. So what we do as instructors is try to translate that and bring it into English, you know, for the students, because most of the students, they only understand English now. Hopefully one day we can tell the stories in the entirety in the Lakota language and they can grasp it, you know. But for now, you know, we're using English language to bring across the story. And it's not adequate, but it you know, we can work with that, you know.
Yeah. I'd like to get back to the subject of leaders and Mike Hermanyhorse's in European and white culture, there's a concept of leaders, and I'm wondering if it's different in Lakota. I mean, for example, can you equate And I think for some of us from the white side, try to look at the Lakota leaders that those names we hear all the time, and try to equate them with, say, you know, our you know, the leaders, our presidents, and that sort of thing. But is it a different system of government and leadership? I mean, can it be equated that easily?
Well, leadership today and leadership prior to the establishment of the reservation, there were two really major responsibilities: is protect our people. So prior to 1878, when Pine Ridge was established as a reservation, you had to be a fighting individual to protect our way. After that, the fight turned to different means, methods, not violence. So today's leaders, you need to be astute. We live in three societies here. We live in a tribal society, we live in the Western United States society, and we have a global society, and we have a role in each one of those. Finding our place and defining our role is what we're going through today, and this institution helps in that regard. The leaders today need to be wise to all three of those things, okay? We no longer have to pick a gun up to defend ourselves, but we need to pick up knowledge on how to protect ourselves. The government today, a lot of, we have resources, not just Pine Ridge, but Indian Country as well. So we need to be astute in protecting those resources. And if we decide to develop them, make sure that they benefit us. For too many years, we've been our resources have been stolen from us. And right now, there's a theft that no one understands. The state of South Dakota understands a little bit, and that's the theft of our water in the Missouri River. We all have to be wise to that. So leaders today have a complicated set of issues to deal with. Western leaders, they get elected by popular vote. A very small minority. Senator Tim Johnson was elected with Pine Ridge votes. That election came down Highway 18. So leadership is about presenting a popular message. But tribal leadership here, you have to prove yourself that you can provide and protect. So that's the big difference. And you have a huge base to protect. First of all, your family, and then you get into your extended family. So you have to prove your abilities to hundreds of people here before they allow you to stand up and you can say, I'm a leader of my family.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. We're here at Glola Lakota College. We've been talking with tribal historian Mike Hermanyhorses. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us. Also with us is an instructor in Lakota culture here at the college, Wilmer Mesteth. And you'll stay here, and we'll hear some songs and some stories as well.
Okay.
As a part of STPB's Landscapes of South Dakota series, we're broadcasting from Oglala Lakota College on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Spiritual leader, musician, and Lakota Studies instructor William Mesteth is with us, and among other things, he's put out some CDs, and including one a few years ago about victory songs from the Battle of the Little Bighorn. He's a descendant of some of the chiefs involved in the Battle of Little Bighorn. And I'm wondering, as far as these stories and songs, how important are, you know, what are, you know, how the stories and the songs are connected? Do they tell different things, or are they part of just the general storytelling tradition, the oral tradition in Lakota culture?
Some of the songs that I sing, you know, they tell segments of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. In that recording that I did, you know, it's called Lakota Are Charging. And in there I have songs of Chief Crazy Horse and what happened, you know, before, during, and after the battle. And after the battle, a lot of these songs were composed, and they had victory dances, you know, the Northern Cheyenne and Lakota, Oglala Lakota people. And the words in the songs were eyewitness accounts by the women folk that witnessed the battle, you know, from across on the bluffs across the river. And so they seen the a battle transpire entirety, you know. So some of the songs are portraying the eyewitness account of the women folk. And some of the oral history accounts of what happened, you know, before the battle and after the battle, you know. And especially what happened to Chief Crazy Horse, you know, after the battle, you know. He was hounded, you know, by the soldiers over that winter of 1876 and 77. And finally he decided to surrender, you know. So there's a whole oral history account of his surrender and how he rode into near present-day Crawford, Nebraska, and surrendered there, you know.
Well, you have with us a drum, and we're going to hear a song or two. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about this drum and how it helps to tell the stories of these, like, for example, we're talking about the Battle of Little Bighorn and the other stories.
Some of the songs that I sing, like the Little Bighorn songs, I use this drum to bring the story to life, you know. And the song is about occurrence or a segment of the battle, or it's about the leaders of the battle, you know. I think this first song I'm going to sing is a song of Chief Crazy Horse, you know, at the time of his surrender. And this was on May 12th of 1877. He surrendered there about 4 miles on this side of Crawford, Nebraska. And he surrendered to the commander of Fort Robinson, Clark. And this song is known in our culture because it's a song of the Braveheart. The Braveheart, you know, is a warrior society. And it was a song that was used to honor the great Chief Crazy Horse, you know, at the time of his surrender. And so the Lakota and the Cheyenne people, when they rode in with him, they rendered the song, you know. And so the oral history of that account of what happened there when he surrendered, they said they could hear the singing coming. And his people were spread out and they were coming in on horseback, you know, single file. And you could hear them singing all the way to the back, and women folk singing too. And that's where he proudly came in and surrendered, you know. And he gave up his weapons, you know. Mm-hmm. And in our language, they say, "Tashunke witko wipre ekiginake." He gave up his arms like that, you know. So this is the song, you know.
Okay.
That's a Braveheart Society song, and the words say, "I loved the ways of war, and now it's difficult to maintain the love of war." So said Crazy Horse. Tashunke witko.
Do you have another song you could share?
This is a victory song of the Little Bighorn Battle, and
Yeah, I appreciate. Yeah, I understand you were sick lately, yeah. But I appreciate you coming in here and taking the time.
This song is talking about General Custer. It says, "My friend Custer, what is it that you search for when you come charging and attacking our people? My friend Custer, what is it that you search for? So now there you lie in such a way." And according to the oral history account of Lakota people, when they discovered that it was Tenghaska, General Custer, that was annihilated, the Lakota people turned him face down to the ground so that his spirit cannot travel. And that's what the song's talking about. It says, now what are you looking for, you know? So you now there you lie in such a way, you know.
Now these songs were passed down?
Oh, yes.
That these were the original songs that would have been in the aftermath of the battle, and then they've just passed down through the generations?
Yes, they are.
At some point, are these songs written down, or is just they're just passed down from?
No, they're not written down.
They're passed down.
They're a part of our oral tradition, too, you know.
And who's telling these stories now? Who's learning the songs?
Well, I am now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The ones that told me are all passed on now, you know. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, you know, my parents. But they've all passed on now. So I've become the storyteller.
I'm just wondering who the next generation of storytellers are. Are there people
probably
that are
my
learning?
Students and mm-hmm. my children.
And what does it mean for your students and telling these stories and songs? I'm wondering how that fits in with sort of the broader education that they have here at Lakota College, because you know, as we've been talking about, they go into many different fields.
Yes, I think it's very important that our Lakota students, you know, retain our history, our culture, our language, our religious beliefs, because it identifies us and it makes us distinct among all cultures of the world. We are a distinct culture, the Dakota Lakota people. And there's nothing like it in the world, uh-huh. you know. And I think our students need to see that, you know. Because of all these years of colonization, when colonization set in, it's going to take maybe that many years to decolonize ourselves, you know. And part of that is learning our traditions, our history, and reviving our language and practicing our religious beliefs. You know, 1883, this government, United States government, outlawed religious practice for our people, cultural practice for our people. We couldn't sing these songs in public, you know. They were outlawed, and technically that law is still on the books. 1996, President Clinton guaranteed Native American religious freedom rights for all Native Americans in this country, just that recently, you know. And before that time, you know, we were stifled, you know, as far as religion, religious beliefs, cultural beliefs.
Do you feel then now, for lack of a better word, an unstifling, that now you're free to continue the culture and get the decolonization that you were talking about?
Yes. We're starting to see decolonization efforts taking place right now. It's exciting to see when you can see the life come back into our people And once again, they're standing up and they're being counted. And then they're taking their place, you know, in globally, you know, in representing themselves as a people.
We often read, sad stories and the troubles that are on the reservation. It sounds like what's happening here at Oglala Lakota College and the passing down of the songs and stories that you do, that there's hope.
Oh, yes. You know, when people come into our reservation, and maybe they might drive through White Clay, Nebraska, you know, and might see some of our relatives there lying in the street like that. But that's not the full picture. There's maybe 30, 40 people maybe sitting there, you know, alcoholics, you know, they have problem. But the entire reservation, there's good things going on. And the entire reservation, we got a large reservation, you know. And communities, 75 communities here. Every one of these communities, there's positive things going on in every one of them. And it's good to see our young people getting involved, you know, in spite of our poverty here on the reservation, you know. There's a lot of exciting things, you know, people are bringing here, you know, gardening projects, all kinds of things, you know. Sustainability programs for that sustainability, because we're looking at our future, you know, and our young people's getting involved in that, you know, and our young people are becoming engineers, science engineers, you know. It's exciting to see that, you know. I really enjoy, a lot of them are my students, and I'm proud of them, you know.
All right. Well, Wilmer Mestath, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday and even sharing a couple of songs, even with a slight cold.
Yeah, okay.